Well, good morning. Good to see so many people out this morning. And welcome our visitors. If you're here visiting with us, we're glad that you've chosen to be among us. And glad to see those that have tuned into our Facebook live stream page. We're having some technical difficulty this morning, so we had to go old school again. This morning's title is Love is in the Air. It's an overview of Song of Solomon. I have it titled Part 1. I put it together, and I had a way that it was supposed to look in my head. By the time I got done with it, I said, this needs to be two parts. So we'll get it again, Love in the Air Part 2, next week. So this morning is the overview of Song of Solomon. Next week, we're going to talk about some lessons to glean from this short book, Song of Solomon. By the first verse of this song, it indicates that Solomon felt this was the first or the finest of the 1,005 songs that it was recorded that he wrote in 1 Kings 4, verse 32. It says, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. The New English Translation Bible, or the NET Bible, actually renders this as Song of Solomon 1:1 would say in the NET Bible, Solomon's most excellent love song. That's how they have translated that. Some versions don't even call it the Song of Solomon. Because of this first verse, they refer to it as the Song of Songs. But this is the excellency of the songs that he has written. Of the 1,005 songs that Solomon wrote, this is it as far as Solomon is concerned, and the only one that is recorded for us in the Bible. It's the only one that God has told us is inspired. Some people over time have questioned its inspiration and why it's even included in the Bible. Some people stay away from it because of its kind of erotic themes and the exotic themes and the figurative language defining love and that physical intimacy between a husband and wife. But God shows us the proper context for dating and for love in marriage with the theme of commitment. And that is why this book belongs in the canon. For those who grew up in a church, I don't know about you, but I always look forward to Christian gatherings when I was in my late teens, early 20s, when I was young and single, to try out some Song of Solomon pickup lines, to borrow some Valentine Day cards from Solomon. I would start off with this one. Your hair is like a flock of goats that have descended from Mount Gilead. And man, if that didn't make her swoon from Song of Solomon chapter 4 and verse 1, I hit her with this one. Your temples are like a slice of a pomegranate behind your veil. Sometimes she'd look at you like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds pretty. So if I had her still on the line, she hadn't walked away yet, I hit her with this one. Your eyes are like doves. From Song of Solomon 1 and verse 15. And then sometimes, she may or may not have appreciated this one. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon, which faces toward Damascus, from Song of Solomon 7:4. But this time she's walking away to the next guy. And I kind of skip that whole other thing, and I go to the next one, and I hit her with this one. Your lips are like a scarlet thread, and your mouth is lovely. Now she's hooked. Now she's interested. She's like, go on, and I bring out the big guns. Your teeth are like a flock of newly shorn ewes, which have come up from their washing, all of which bear twins, and not one among them has lost her young. From Song of Solomon 4 and verse 2. This is, I'm just telling her, like Solomon is telling the Shulamite, your teeth all match, and you're not missing any. That's a compliment. But I struck out most times. I leave it to Solomon. I think Solomon had much better luck with the Shulamite. But this time of the year, when love is in the air, as they say, most are concerned about young people. Young people seem to be the target demographic for whether it's Hallmark cards or Valentine's Day commercials and all those who are dating, those who are flirting and dating and maybe even engaged. They seem to be the targeted demographic. And while this short book addresses all ages when it comes to the age of dating and marriage, we're going to focus this morning on married couples. Because we're going to discuss marital romance. And in fact, that was almost the title of this lesson. That was what I had in mind when I put it together, was to title it Marital Romance or Romance in the Marriage, or any variation of that. But as I put it together, all I could think of was Paul Young's song, Love is in the Air. And so I ended up going with that as my title, Love is in the Air. But the Song of Songs is an explicit but tasteful love song designed to point singles to patience, spouses to each other, and everyone towards God. In fact, it can later be used to describe Christ's relationship to the church. Ephesians 5, 22 to 33 talks about the mystery of marriage is really talking about the relationship between the church and Christ. And we'll touch on that more in next week's lesson. This is not a book of allegory, as some say. It's not a sex manual. It is the poetic description of a romance between a husband and wife. Yes, I said that right. Husbands and wives can have romance. But so many people in our society seem to think that once a couple is married, the romance is dead. You can see that in changes to comic book heroes. Changes first to Spider-Man in 2008, and then the Superman comics 2011. An article from MSN.com said, younger modern crowds find married superheroes not as cool as single ones. So DC Comics changed their heroes across the board in an event back in 2011 called the New 52, and every superhero who was married, the marriage was removed, and they started over with them younger and more single. Marvel did it in 2008 in a limited scope. Not all of their heroes' marriages were removed, but it was so popular among fans, DC did it 3 years later in 2011. Seen in the attitudes towards the family in books, movies, TV, etc., that the message seems to be it's not cool to be married. It seems writers of comics, books, movies, and TV think it's all about the chemistry while someone is dating, the will they, won't they tension. And that once they do get married, it seems the writers think the story is boring and most shows get canceled, or the book gets canceled, or they go in a new direction, or comic book writers years later totally erase all of those relationships. And it makes me think that these writers are writing off of, maybe they're based on their own experiences, which then makes me say, that's really sad. If these writers are married and they feel like the story is over and it's boring and there's no romance and nothing left to tell, I feel sorry for their lives. Because that's not the way God intended marriage to be. I saw an article, I would have included this in the lesson and on the outline, but I only saw this yesterday, and it's from a study that was published on Friday from the National Survey of Family Growth, the NFSG. They surveyed 50,000 married women, or married cases, 50,000 marriage cases, even those that ended in divorce, and they were studying about the cases of divorce. And this study was released on Friday saying, if you're a woman in your 30s, it's safe to get married because your likelihood of divorce is lower than if you marry earlier than 30. But as you go through that study has a caveat. It says, except women from the ages of 22 to 30, out of these 50,000 cases that they surveyed, who did not live together first, who did not cohabit first, had the lowest percentages of divorce out of that survey. And I love the responses of this. Huh, you mean the Bible had it right all those thousands of years ago? Yeah, that relationship belongs in the marriage. And that's what this book, Song of Solomon, is all about. The Song of Solomon demonstrates that the married couple can still love one another and delight in one another's company. So this morning, I'm going to share with you my overview of the book. And your headings might be different. I'm going to share with you how I view the book, and it's in three parts. The first overview that we're going to look at is the dating section. Song of Solomon's 1 verse 2 through chapter 3 and verse 5. Song of Solomon includes dating, and even Solomon's extolling of her praise of her beauty is different than after they're married. It's less intimate than when they are married. So there is a dating phase of this book. But we need to remember that what we're discussing is a song. It is called the Song of Songs, which belongs to Solomon. And in this song, there are two main characters. King Solomon and his bride, called a Shulamite by the chorus in Song of Solomon 6, verse 13. And while we're talking about it, there is a chorus made up of what is called the Daughters of Jerusalem. And you can see that in chapter 1, verse 5, and chapter 2, and verse 7, and then throughout the psalm. I just throw out those two so you can look at that for quick reference and see what I'm talking about. Sometimes they're referred to as the daughters of Zion. Zion and Jerusalem are synonymous, so I imagine it was a rhyming technique or something in the Hebrew when this was written. But they're referred to as the daughters of Jerusalem or daughters of Zion. And then depending on your research on this book, you're going to see many guesses and speculation on who the bride is. She is referred to as the Shulamite or a Shulamite in Song of Solomon 6, verse 13. And some think the Shulamite is the Queen of Sheba. Some think it's Abishag, who nursed David in his old age. Some think it's a woman from Shunem that belonged to the Valley of Jezreel, and that goes to the etymology of the name Shulamite. It could also be called Shunammite. And some think that it's the Egyptian princess that Solomon married and for whom he built a house. Whoever she was, as we're going to read through this short song, we're not going to read everything, we're going to look in sections, she captured his heart. She captured the heart of the king. And there's another option, because it is a love song, it may not be talking about anyone in particular. It could be just a love song Solomon wrote with him in it, and it's a fictional version. Whatever it is, whoever it was in the song, she captured the king's heart. And it could be Pharaoh's daughter. There's a couple different evidences for that within the book. If you look in Song of Solomon 1:9, he's going to compare her to the chariots of Pharaoh, or the finest of his horses of the chariots of Pharaoh. And in chapter 7, verse 1, he's going to call her prince's daughter. It also could be that Shulamite might just be a term of endearment. For the Hebrew word, and you can look in the Strong's Dictionary at 7759, Shulamite means perfect, without spot or blemish, and peaceful. So it could be, by calling her Shulamite, they're saying perfect one or peaceful one. And this fits, since Solomon extols her beauty over and over and over again throughout the song, and he tells her that she is perfect in chapter 1, verse 8, chapter 4, verse 7, and chapter 6, and verse 9. So it could be that the term Shulamite is just a term of endearment in chapter 6 and verse 13. But let's talk about the main characters. And I've chosen to talk about the bride first. She's the first one to speak in the psalm. And she describes herself as dark-skinned from the sun. In fact, she says in Song of Solomon 1, 5 through 6, in just the first part of 6 or 6a, she says, "I am black but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem. Like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not stare at me because I'm swarthy, for the sun has burned me." That Hebrew word swarthy, I really like that word. But the Hebrew word for swarthy means black or dark. So again, it fits. She's saying, I am dark-skinned, but I'm burned by the sun. She loves the king, and she tells him and tells the daughters of Jerusalem in Song of Solomon 1:2, "May he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine." And she refers to him this way in chapter 2, verse 16, "My beloved is mine, and I am his." And she goes on to say, her eyes are only for him. She calls the king, "him whom my soul loves," in a dream sequence in chapter 3, 1 to 5. And in chapter 1, verse 16, she describes him as handsome. One of the big lessons that we can take away from this phase is she is pure. She is chaste prior to the wedding day. This is said in several different ways and times. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 12, 6, 9 to 10. We'll talk about that one in particular later on. And chapter 8, 8 to 10, as the song closes, it goes back to her brothers who helped raise her. And her brothers say that they saw in their mind she was still a child. And they said if she was pure on the day that they gave her away, they would pay a dowry to her husband. And they refer to that being as a wall. They said, but if she is a door, meaning if she is promiscuous before the day of the wedding, they would not let her marry. They would shut her away and barricade her. And she tells her brothers in that passage, "I am a wall." She's confirming her chaste and pure nature prior to the wedding day. And then there's King Solomon. And both while dating and after the wedding, he extols and praises her beauty. And he's going to extol and praise her beauty from the top of her head to her feet and the shape in between. And you can see that in Song of Solomon 1:9, 2:14, chapter 4, 1-15, and chapter 7, 1-9. And he uses his words to tell her just how exquisite he finds her, and even tells her that his harem couldn't keep from praising her beauty and purity in chapter 6, 8-10. This is one of those passages I said that describes her purity. In this context, he says that his queens and concubines, they saw her beauty, they saw her purity, and they couldn't help but praise her and exclaim the goodness that was inside her. So Solomon says even his harem couldn't help but praise this wonderful young woman. And you would expect in this Song of Songs on romance and dating and marriage, there would be some flirting. Well, you would not be disappointed. There is flirting found in this book. This song even has their witty banter over how humble the bride was on her appearance. In Song of Solomon chapter 2, 1-3, she says, "I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valleys." And then when I first read that, I think she's saying, "I'm something special," until you read about what the rose of Sharon is. It was common in the valleys. The rose of Sharon is another one of these lilies. She's saying there's nothing special about her appearance. I just blend in among the lilies. But notice Solomon's response. "Like a lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens." Solomon tells her she's prettier than all other women. He says, "You're not a lily among lilies. You're the lily among the thorns. Everyone else compared to you is a thorn." Husbands, have you ever told your wife she's the lily among the thorns? To let her know that you think she's hot, you think she's pretty, you think she's beautiful. She might say, "I'm the rose of Sharon, I'm just the lily of the valleys." But you be like Solomon and tell her what you really think. And then she fires back, "Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest." So she uses the same kind of analogy he does. "An apple tree among just the regular trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. In his shade I took great delight and sat down, and his fruit was sweet to my taste." She told him that he stood out from among other men and it was definitely not ordinary. Later on, she's going to say just how well he stood out from other men. But for right now, as they're flirting during this dating phase, she says he stands out, he's not ordinary. And then we can read of the wedding day and the honeymoon. This is the second part of the overview. There's the dating phase, and then there's the wedding day and honeymoon night. We see in Song of Solomon 3, verse 6, all the way through chapter 5 and verse 1. But we're going to talk first about the wedding. We're going to see in chapter 3 and verse 6 that King Solomon is going to show up with much fanfare, with a custom sedan chair made from the timber of Lebanon. It says its interior, quote, "is lovingly fitted out by the daughters of Jerusalem, escorted by 60 valiant or mighty men, all experts in war with their swords at their side." They're armed, and it specifically states they're experts in war. Why on earth would he show up with that kind of entourage? Think about it. He's taking no chances on this day. The very best and the most trained of his men are going to be there to make sure nothing happens to his bride on this day. On this special day, she's going to be protected. He wore his best crown. We can read there in verse 11. It says it's the one his mother placed upon his head. That would be Bathsheba, that she placed on his head on the day of his wedding. And he made such a striking groom that the daughters of Jerusalem, the daughters of Zion, were told to gaze upon him in all his magnificence. He cut quite the figure on his wedding day. And then almost as if it's the vow portion, we look in Song of Solomon 4, 1-15, and we're not going to read all the way through it. I encourage you to do so. He's going to praise her from the top of her head down to her feet. He gazes upon his bride and her veil, starting in verse 1. He praises her beauty. He praises her purity in verse 7 as he looks her up and down. He says in verse 7, "You are altogether beautiful, my darling, and there's no blemish in you." This is what Shulamite means. Perfect, without spot, without blemish. He says, "You are altogether beautiful. There's no blemish in you." He's excited on his wedding day. He's looking her up and down and saying, you are altogether beautiful. Then we come to the honeymoon. And we're not going to read this part. I leave that for you to read. And Song of Solomon 4:16 through chapter 5 and verse 1 records the honeymoon night. And with its uses of the words garden and fruits, the song gets its point across that the two have become one. And in Song of Solomon, we see their dating phase, we see the wedding day, and we even get a glimpse into the honeymoon night. And then the last phase we're going to look at in this overview is romance in the marriage. And this lasts from Song of Solomon 5:10 through chapter 8 and verse 7. The wedding takes place early on in this book, or in this chapter, this song, chapters 3 through 4. And the rest of the song shows the happy married couple enjoying one another, going out and expressing their love both in public and in private, and delighting in one another's love. And in fact, in Song of Solomon 5:10-16, we see the bride describe her husband. We see her describe Solomon. And she's going to describe him, how she feels about his form, and she expresses her love for him. She says, my beloved is dazzling and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000, she says in verse 10. We know that Solomon finds her more beautiful than all the other women, and that she had said he stood out among men, but here she calls him outstanding among 10,000. She's saying, just none of the men of Israel can even compare to you. She praised him from his head to his legs, and she said in verse 16, his mouth is full of sweetness, and he is wholly desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. She's saying, ladies, he's mine. Hands off. That's what she's saying. She's saying, he's mine. She's letting the daughters of Jerusalem know that he was hers. And in Song of Solomon 6:4, all the way through chapter 7 through 9, Solomon, in his flattery speech, is going to describe his bride. And he's going to tell her how much he loves her, and that even his harem took notice of her beauty and purity and praised her. And yes, he's through these two chapters, Song of Solomon 6 through chapter 7, he's going to give a full-length portrait of her physical charms. And he's going to compare her to famous places in his far-flung realm, his kingdom that includes Heshbon, Bath-Rabbim, Damascus, and Mount Carmel. Then he sees her as a lovely palm tree, and he wants to embrace her. And here, it gets steamy, I'll just warn you. It gets a little steamy at that point in this song. But then he says in verse 6, how beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. Then he even comments on her breath. He lets the hearers of this song know what her breath was like. And he says, the fragrance of your breath like apples and your mouth like the best wine in verses 8 to 9. Husbands, have you ever told your wives their breath is like the fragrance of apples? And not mean it in a sarcastic, you need to brush your teeth way? But to say, your breath is like the fragrance of apples. He's telling her even the breath, her breath was sweet. His word pictures of her shapely form, as you read through these two chapters and do that on your own. His word pictures of her shapely form convey a portrait of tender and delicate beauty. That's what he's talking about there when he uses the phraseology of gazelles frolicking in the meadow. Delicate and tender beauty. And we see this, the bride's response in chapter 7 and verse 10. She says, I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me. He made her feel special, and that she knew that he desired her. So the question, and one of the lessons that we need to ask ourselves here is, husbands and wives, do your spouses know that you desire them? Do you express that through your words, through your actions? Do they know that your desire is for them? Song of Solomon 7:11-13, the married couple travel together, and everywhere they go, they express their love for one another. The romance isn't dead after their marriage. The romance isn't dead after the honeymoon. It talks about how they travel together and they go from here and they go there and they express their love everywhere. And then in Song of Solomon, as it wraps up in 8, 6, and 7, the bride recognizes that love is stronger than death and it cannot be bought. She says, and we're going to read verses 6 and 7, "Put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. Jealousy is as severe as Sheol. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly despised." She's saying love cannot be destroyed and it cannot be bought. The Beatles once sang back in 1964, "Can't buy me love." But the bride says it here first. In the Song of Songs, Solomon's most excellent song, and this love song as it wraps up, Solomon is reminding us, those who would hear this song, love cannot be bought. Not even if you were to give all that you had, you cannot buy this kind of love. So who says romance and marriage is gone? Husbands and wives, take a lesson from these two lovebirds and express your love for one another. We're going to draw some further lessons from this Song of Songs next time. But one of the things I want to talk about now is that marriage is a gift from God. Marriage is a gift from God so that we might enjoy and delight in the one whom our soul loves, as the Shulamite says of Solomon in Song of Solomon 3 and verse 4. And several passages bear this out. In Genesis 2 verse 24, God says, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Proverbs 5 and verse 18, "Let your fountain be blessed, rejoice in the wife of your youth." Proverbs 18 verse 22, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." Proverbs 31:10, "An excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels." Husbands, do you tell your wife what she means to you? Her value? That she's worth far above any gold or silver or above any jewel or ruby? Hebrews 13:4 says, "Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge." And here, even in this book, in the dating section, the bride was pure and chaste prior to that day when they became one. So the lesson I want to leave you with this morning, after looking at this overview on this love song, this Song of Songs, is have patience while dating. Embrace your spouse on the wedding day. And then continue to flirt. Go on dates together. Do things together. Spend time together and let your spouse know how much they mean to you. And that your spouse ought to know that your desire is only for them. That's what this Song of Songs ultimately teaches us, is that there is romance in marriage, and it ought to be. God expects that, to give yourselves to one another. And this morning, I know we didn't talk about what it takes to become a Christian. So if you are here this morning and not a Christian, to have this type of relationship with your spouse, with God at the forefront, both of you trying to please God, therefore then you would both please one another. You need to be a Christian first, to repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. And if you are here this morning as a Christian in error, don't wait till it's too late. Don't wait for that one day that I will repent. Repent of your errors now and be renewed. Seek the Lord with your whole heart and see what blessings might flow. If we can help you with any of these things this morning, the prayers of the congregation, the waters of baptism, come forward. Let it be known now while together we stand and while we sing.